This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment, this is our Veterans Day program. If you're listening to the program live on November 11th, we'll be taking some calls from you on our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We're going to be talking about some of the scams targeting veterans and also some of the scams targeting all of us. My guest is Joseph Rida, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. That website is www.consumer-action.org. And Consumer Action has a very good guide, which I think you might want to look at if you go to Consumer Action. It's entitled Economic Survival Guide for Service Members and Veterans. Of course, Consumers Action actually is a fighter of scams generally for all of us. The other scam fighting organization that I'd like you to know about is called Scambusters. That's www.scambusters.org. And for veterans, let me give you that because it has a very good piece on scams targeting veterans. www.scambusters.org/veteransscams.html. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco and by the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding for the program is provided by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's great to have you here. What I'd like to do is ask you at this point, Joe, since you're a real scam buster yourself, by that I mean a fighter of scams, what are some of the major scams that your organization is concerned about with respect to veterans?
Well, veterans and active duty members of the military face a lot of scams, actually, that try to bilk them. For one, we see a lot of just garden variety affinity fraud. Affinity fraud is actually, you know, one of those scams that victimizes people because they go after people that have a certain in with a membership group, be it a religious group, an ethnic group, a language group. But certainly the military is one of these, and we've seen some very unscrupulous veterans and even people who are just posing as being veterans rip people off with Ponzi schemes and other fake investment advice or opportunities that cost people thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. We saw just recently a big case where someone was busted for claiming that they were a so-called charity, even called the Veterans Financial Education Network, that purported to teach veterans how to understand and manage money. But it was really just a classic Ponzi scheme. It was supposed to be a way that people could invest and bring financial information to other veterans and other military personnel. But unfortunately, it was nothing more than another Ponzi scheme that preyed on people's inherent trust of other service members that they thought were trying to help, but in fact, we're just going to rip them off. There was another one.
If I could stop you for just a moment, was that something that was targeting veterans across the country?
Yes, it was. It was a fake charity called the Veterans Financial Education Network.
Has it been closed now by some legal organization?
Yes, it has. It has been shut down. It was actually shut down by the SEC. Mm-hmm. There was some restitution for people, but he was targeting mostly unsophisticated investors and solicited friends and fellow veterans to invest in his purported hedge fund. And he ran this so-called Veterans Financial Education Network that promised outsized returns, but really just wind up spending it on cars and luxury goods and pocketing the money and not really doing any investing and leaving people high and dry once he couldn't rope enough new people into the scheme to keep the Ponzi scheme going.
Joe, what recommendations does Consumer Action have for veterans who are being solicited to get into investment schemes?
Well, find out what the qualifications are, first of all. You know, just because it's someone who is a service member or ex-service member, does that mean that they're qualified to offer high-quality investment advice? You know, maybe, but I'd want to find out what kind of background in investments this person has. Just being in the same way you wouldn't want someone to operate on you in a hospital just because he happens to be a veteran, unless he had a medical degree and a lot of good experience doing the procedure that you need, you wouldn't want to trust anybody, anyone's supposedly great financial advice, unless they've got the education and the experience to back it up. And that has to go beyond the trust me and do it now promises and overtures that, that scammers usually demand.
How does a veteran who, let's say, doesn't have any background at all in this area, how does a veteran determine that he or she can determine whether or not this is a legitimate investment transaction?
Well, it can be very difficult. You know, a key reason that affinity scams like ones that target veterans can succeed for as long as they do is not just that the scammers are skilled at the art of deception, which of course they are, but also that, you know, the affinity group in question, service members and ex-service members, they sometimes have less access to superior sources of information. And plus, if you're deployed or soon to be deployed soldiers, by the nature of their work, you have scarcely any time to compare and evaluate financial products. And
of course,
this exclusion from other sources of information fuels the success of the swindle, unfortunately. But you do owe it to yourself to check it out, make sure they're licensed brokers or hedge fund managers, whatever they claim to be, and go beyond the trust me and we have to do this now demands that are usually going to be coming your way.
When you say they should be licensed by what agency?
Well, they should be a licensed financial advisor, if that's what they're claiming. They should have their Service 7 license. They're investing for you. They should be licensed to practice in your state.
Okay. All right.
And so
there's some state agency that they would have to have some license from, and that is something that you as a service member should check out before you get involved with somebody like this.
And not only that, to find out how long they've been in business, what's their track record.
Yeah.
Just because they have a license doesn't mean that they have a proven track record that you should rely on. But there's plenty of other scams, too. Let me give you some more examples.
Please do.
Veterans buyout scams. These are companies that offer veterans advances of money that they can use now in exchange for their future benefits. If you're a veteran, you can't legally sign over your benefits to any individual. But these companies establish a joint checking account where the veteran deposits their monthly benefits check so the company can withdraw legally this veteran's money. The companies get a huge profit because they only pay about 40 cents on the dollar of what you would have received in the long run from your benefits. And in a lot of cases, veterans are required to sign up for a life insurance policy that's payable to the company. And, it's a really bad deal, but this is a type of scam that targets the military. There's other companies that will sell duplicative life insurance policies on the same similar subject. If you're an active duty member of the military, you already have a life insurance policy in place, but there are companies that will try to sell you something that you don't need and that they, in all likelihood, will never have to pay out on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to watch out for, and there's a lot of protections, interestingly enough, that service members can enjoy that other companies may try to curtail or avoid having to follow. What you're legally protected as a service member. Let me give you a couple of examples. The Service Members Civil Relief Act, this applies to any active duty service member, Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard. The protections begin the day you start service and end about between 30 and 90 days after discharge from active duty. And what this means is you can have your interest capped on almost all of your pre-existing loans or credit lines. That means credit cards, your car loan, even your mortgage, your student loans, at 6%. That's the most it can be. And if you're talking about a credit card, it's often going to be an interest rate of 25% or more for someone who's a young person that it just has their first line of credit. Car loans often are going to be way more than 6%. Mortgages, not so often, but that's going to be unusual for a young military personnel. But it's one of those things where you have to actually communicate with your creditor. You have to give them a written request that includes a copy of your military orders and explains why your service makes it difficult or a financial hardship for you to continue to make the payments under the original terms. Once they get that, you basically are entitled to a 6% cap on all these lines of credit that frequently are much higher than 6%. So that's a big thing, but you've got to send in written proof and a written request. There's also an interest rate cap of 36% on short-term loans that tend to be astronomically high, like payday loans, car title loans. These are the kind of short-term loans that really are just predatory lending that, that run into 300, 400% or more. That's a 36% interest rate cap under what's called the Military Lending Act. This protects active duty, regular or reserve members of the armed forces, and it also protects your spouses and children. Lenders that fall under this law, again, the payday lenders, car title lenders, any kind of predatory lender, as you really could say, you're required to determine before issuing the credit if the prospective borrower fits into these categories, and you've got a 36% cap. If you do.
So, Joe, one of the things...
You've got scams, you've got protections, too.
One of the things that I think is important, since obviously time goes so quickly when we're doing this radio program, is that I want to certainly urge veterans to look at consumer action, and that's www.consumer-action.org, and look for the guide that's entitled Economic Survival Guide for Service Members and Veterans. It's a number of pages, 13 pages, that goes into a lot of information, because obviously on this radio show, Your Legal Rights, we can't talk about everything, but I want to encourage you to do so. One of the other things that I think is important here, with all of the information that Consumer Action has compiled, if a veteran is trying to get some help in determining whether or not something is legitimate or not, is there any federal agency that the veteran can go to try to get some input, or do you know of any?
Well, one good place to turn if you're a military personnel facing that kind of a decision or facing financial difficulty of any kind, really, there's a military aid society that exists for each branch of the military, and these groups, if you are having financial difficulty, they can make small interest-free loans or grants to active duty service members or veterans. In some cases, you can find out, depending on what the branch of the military you belong to or belongs to. There's one for the Air Force. There's the Navy Marine Corps Relief Society for that branch, the Coast Guard Mutual Assistance, Army Emergency Relief. We've got all those in that Economic Survival Guide.
Yes, and you have the websites for all of them, actually, on page 3 of that guide.
Those military aid societies can be very valuable sources of information if you're skeptical about some questionable ways to invest your money or to make important financial decisions or to turn to in the event that you're having a serious hardship.
Joe, because we are moving so quickly at this point, I want to let the listeners know about some protections, whether you're a veteran or whether you are not in the armed forces at all. The Federal Trade Commission has an ID theft affidavit, and I highly recommend to all of you that if you think you've been victimized by some kind of an ID theft, Google in, and let me give you the title of this, FTC, that stands for, of course, Federal Trade Commission, FTC Identity Theft Victims Complaint and Affidavit. This is something that you can quickly fill out. You can submit to a police department, or you can send also to the Federal Trade Commission to get something going there. One of the other things that I think, particularly for Californians, but I think it applies to anyone in terms of educating yourself and trying to be protect yourself from identity theft protection. The California Attorney General's Office has a guide, and it's entitled Top 10 Tips for Identity Theft Protection. It's a number of pages, really, really fine in terms of sample letters you might send to the credit reporting agencies, sample letters you might send to credit companies. And I want to give you that that website also. Again, it's Top 10 Tips for Identity Theft Protection, www.oag.ca.gov/privacy. Although it is prepared and submitted and made available to anyone in California, anyone can get it if you go to the website. It's just an excellent source. Finally, something that I'd like you to talk about in just a moment, if you would, Joe, for those of us, and we're going to talk about in the remaining few minutes of the statewide version, which is the first half hour, some other scams directed at all of us. The Consumer Federation of California has a, quote, protect yourself from the grandparent scheme. And I suggest to all of you who may have parents who are elderly and maybe too trusting, this is a scheme where, for example, someone will pose as a grandchild and out of the blue, or maybe you get some information about someone, will call an older person and say, hi, Grandma, hi, Grandpa, I'm having real problems. And the grandpa or the grandma may say, oh, is this David? And this guy who's a scammer will say, oh, yes, yes, it is. I've just been arrested, or I've been in an accident, or I'm having a problem, etc. So if you think that anyone in your family who may be possibly a grandparent, who may be, let's say, victimized, Google grandparent scam, and you'll see this form, this protect yourself from the grandparent scam. It's a one-page thing, which I think is very helpful. What do you know about the grandparent scheme, Joe?
Well, it's one of those scams that have been around for a long time, and it still is, because unfortunately it works enough to be profitable for those that are participating in it. And get, you know, like you said, it often involves a scammer calling someone and just saying, Grandma, Grandpa, I've been arrested, or I'm getting kicked out of my home, some other financial emergency, I need bail. Usually involves not just a financial threat, but some kind of physical threat as well. But, you know, they need money immediately, and they want them to, you know, it used to be wiring money by Western Union. Nowadays, that's less often the payment instrument than is, say, a prepaid credit card. They'll tell someone to go to the store and buy Green Dot credit cards or some other kind of prepaid credit instrument, and then turn over the numbers to the purported grandson or granddaughter, and the scammers will use that to extract the $500 or $2,500 or what have you that they supposedly need, and because they're often operating out of the country, the grandma or grandpa won't ever see that money again. It's a terrible scheme that I suppose on one level, you know, it is still popular and maybe even gaining popularity because, you know, as a society, you know, we don't always stay in touch with our grandparents.
That's true.
We are increasingly mobile. Maybe many grandparents don't see their grandchildren for maybe 10 years, during which time they grow from a small child to a teenager. And it would be very difficult for anyone to reliably identify someone as truly their grandchild after so much time and such little contact. And you couple that with the fact that someone who is, you know, very elderly, you know, there's some statistics that show that for those over the age of 85, maybe 25% are suffering some degree of dementia. That also can let down someone's guard when they need it the most when confronted with a scam like this. So there's a lot of reasons why the grandparent scam continues, but unfortunately it continues with more success than it should. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where maybe you need enhanced penalties when it comes to punishing people who do these sorts of things, because you're preying on people who are, you know, they're responding for, you know, out of love, out of,
sure, of course,
concern for someone in trouble, and you're exploiting someone who may not be in the best position to evaluate the legitimacy of the request. So there's a lot of reasons why elder fraud requires enhanced penalties, and this is one of them.
Before we went on the program, you mentioned to me that there is apparently a fairly new scam going on with regard to chip cards. Would you, and this is an ID theft scam. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. You know, a lot of scams just pluck something out of the news or current events and then repurpose it into whatever the narrative is to extract money or information from someone. And the latest one of these, are these chip card scams. And a lot of people have heard that the new chip cards are coming. Millions of us have received new chip credit cards. And these are the cards that instead of being swiped and signed for, you wind up, you insert them into a different kind of terminal and then, you know, extract them after you sign for the purchase you're making. But, you know, not everyone has received these new chip cards. And scammers are trying to take advantage of the people who haven't got one yet but are expecting one. What winds up happening is the scammers email people or call them, posing as the card issuer. And the scammers say that in order to get your new chip card, you have to update your account by confirming personal information or clicking on a link to continue the process. And that link very often will contain malware or spyware that will allow them to extract your keystrokes in the future, or to directly access your online activities, which could include, you know, the contents of your bank account if you're using online access. So it's a identity theft scheme, but it's using brand new current events information to make it seem like something brand new and make it seem more plausible than other iterations might have been in the past. But yeah, that's one to watch out for. Anybody contacting you saying that in order to get your new chip card, you must provide some kind of information or take specific steps that don't seem right. That's not something any bank is doing right now.
The banks will not call someone on the phone.
No, the bank is just going to send you a new card.
Yes,
you're eligible for one. You're just going to get the card in the mail. You cut up the old card. You start using the new card once you activate it. For people who aren't completely sure on how the whole thing works, scammers are trying to exploit that.
One of the things that I find very helpful, and this is not only good for Californians, but anyone across the country, as discussed in the California Attorney General's top 10 tips for identity theft protection, and that is if you believe that you have been a victim of ID theft, what you need to do, of course, is contact any one of the three major credit reporting bureaus, which of course are national bureaus, Experian, Equifax, or TransUnion, and explain what's going on here. And each one of those, if you call one of them, and there are toll-free numbers, and tell them, I believe I've been a victim of some kind of identity theft and someone's using my name, et cetera, et cetera. What they will do is they'll contact that particular credit reporting agency, will contact the other two, and they will set up a protection for you by, at least for the time being, that there's some issue going on here. And then also in the top 10 tips for identity theft protection, if it's really very significant, you can find out how you can freeze your credit files. And that you need to get a police report from wherever you live and get the report and then submit it to the credit card companies. And certainly under California law, what you're then entitled to is each month from actually each of the three major credit reporting agencies, you're entitled under California law to getting a free credit report. So you could get as many, and I hope this doesn't happen to you, but you could get as many as 36 credit reports during a year's period. Do you have any thoughts?
And the freeze, too, will prevent anyone from opening new accounts.
Oh, yeah, and that's very important.
Even if you have your Social Security number and all your personal information, nobody's opening any new accounts, including yourself. Yeah. If you freeze your credit, it's a very drastic step, but it's the best one for people who have legitimate concern to fear. You know, to circle back, Chuck, to some of the stuff affecting the military,
please.
There's actually a feature with the Fair Credit Reporting Act that allows service members to place an active duty alert in their credit reports.
So
and it's effective for a full year. It's a more heavy duty fraud alert than the 90-day fraud alert that ordinary people can request, and it can be a very useful tool for those who may not be able to be calling their bank and checking on things for quite a long time. An active duty alert is something you're entitled to that can effectively have the same kind of fraud alert, but have it in place for longer than you otherwise would be entitled
to. How does a service member know to deal with something like this?
You know, just as you were saying, to request a fraud alert by contacting one of the three credit bureaus.
Okay, all right.
Same way, contact any of the three. and tell them you want an active duty alert, and they will pass on the information to the other two, and it will be in place. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say one more.
Please.
Talk about one more scam that's targeting veterans. And this is interesting because, it's a scam, in my opinion, but it has not, in a global way, been declared illegal. And this is the actions of for-profit colleges that are preying on veterans. This is, the for-profit sector, the big ones are like University of Phoenix and DeVry University, et cetera, places where you've got the highest student loan default rates and the lowest graduation rates. And basically, these for-profit colleges, they rely almost exclusively on federal money to stay in business. You've got the new GI Bill program, that's very generous school benefits paid to fighters since the original bill was enacted. It can be used by not just a veteran, it can also be used by a member of the immediate family, and over 1 million people have used it so far. But who is using it? You look at the University of Phoenix. They've gotten over $1 billion.
We have 1 minute left on the statewide version, Joe.
All right, quickly. One campus of the University of Phoenix in San Diego, when we're talking about California, they received more federal GI Bill benefits than the entire 10-campus UC system and its extension campuses combined. It's outrageous, but they see veterans as these walking dollar signs, and they basically can use veterans to get around this so-called 90-10 rule, where they have to get at least 10% of their revenue from non-federal funds. But it's unfortunately perhaps the biggest scam, and the worst part about it is that it has not been declared illegal across the board. We've seen shutterings of bad schools like Corinthians, but there's plenty of other really bad for-profit schools that are targeting veterans, and you got to be careful about that.
Well, you got to be very, very careful, Joe. Again, let me just mention that you really need to take a look at www.consumer-action.org and get some more information there. All right, I want to give all of you our toll-free number in case you have a question, a comment, whether it's you're a veteran and concerned about scams, or you're not a veteran. The rest of us are also targets for scammers. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Joseph Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization, with its website, www.consumer-action.org. And again, I want to repeat that Consumer Action has a very good guide entitled Economic Survival Guide for Service Members and Veterans. Consumer Action has many, many more educational things about scams affecting all of us. So if you're trying to educate yourself, I would suggest that you might want to go to the website for Consumer Action on that. And I want to encourage all of you who may have been scammed at some point or are concerned about being scammed to join us with your questions, your comments, whatever you feel, and whether or not there is something that you feel you'd like to share. I really welcome your call, 866-798-8255. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area's Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone experienced in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. The beauty of this is that with minor exception throughout California, a half an hour consultation through the lawyer referral service will cost you somewhere between $25 to $35. It's a great consumer service. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to make sure that those services are still available to all of us throughout California. And it's my hope that throughout the United States that there are comparable lawyer referral services out there. So for those of you awful quiet out there tonight, I don't know what's going on. Last night was the last or the fourth Republican debate. And why we are not getting calls at this point, I'm not sure. Joe, you know, one of the things that I think people need to be aware of, we're all into bidding, I suppose, like on eBay for something. I remember a few years ago in my office, a woman was actually, she wanted to buy a camcorder, which is some kind of a little camera. And she went on eBay and she saw that this was available. She liked it. She bid on it about $600. She received a message back that she had won and was told to wire money to a specific account, which she did. However, no camcorder came through, and she filed a complaint with my office, the San Mateo County DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit. And we looked into it, and one of the deputy sheriffs who was working with my unit at this time went to her bank where she actually went to wire the money, and the bank said that this money that was wired was sent to some account in Latvia, and Latvia is next to Russia. And, of course, you can imagine that a investigator in a county in California is not going to Latvia. So unfortunately, she lost her money as well as not getting the camcorder. This was, and I think the value of this is, this was a sophisticated woman. And eBay has a PayPal where you can tell eBay that you don't want to release the money until you've received the item and you've actually seen that it is what it's supposed to be and is in decent shape. She didn't do that. So I alert anybody who wants to bid on something on the Internet, be extremely careful. Joe?
Yeah, well, you know, eBay does have, you know, very limited protections compared to what, for example, the Fair Credit Billing Act has to protect people who buy stuff off eBay. You know, basically, if you select the Pay Now button on eBay and use the payment options, like they want you to use PayPal, but you can use other options as well. But if somebody messages you or, you know, personally sends you an email and says, you know, by the way, I know that you bought the item for $700, but if you pay this way, you can have the item for only $600. Just I won't have to pay taxes or whatever kind of line they give. You know, just wire me the money or send me a prepaid card. That's how you get into trouble, and that's where you are not going to be backed up by eBay or PayPal. The best way, I think, to protect yourself buying something on eBay or when you have the option to use PayPal, don't use PayPal. Use a credit card.
Ah, yes, of course.
From a debit card. Yeah, just, you know, when you're using PayPal, you don't necessarily have to use funds that are stored in PayPal. You have much more abundant protections under the Fair Credit Billing Act, but you only get those when you use a credit card, not
okay.
with a debit card.
And that's, of course,
PayPal.
And, of course, that's the law of, nationally, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, you know, in the event that you don't get what you paid for, then you have 60 days from when the charge hits your credit card statement to request a chargeback, really one of the most powerful consumer rights we have. And the credit card issuer can basically take the money back from the merchant and make them prove that things were on the up and up. And if they weren't, then the provisional credit that a credit card gives you immediately becomes permanent. But
and
yeah, when you pay with PayPal, you don't have to use PayPal funds. You can actually just type in a credit card, and that's going to protect you much more than certainly PayPal will, but you know, much more than doing some kind of janky payment option that someone might message you.
You don't want to use your debit card either, though.
No, yeah, debit cards would be better than, you know, sending somebody wired money or whatever.
But that is not the same. But you don't have the same protection using a debit card as you do with a credit card, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so you got to be very careful.
The federal protections are much more limited with debit cards. So if you have a credit card and a debit card, just put the debit card down and pay with the credit card.
Yes, all right. Yeah, be careful, everybody. Don't make a mistake of which card you're going to use. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on scams targeting veterans and scams targeting all of the rest of us, because there are plenty of scams out there. My guest is Joseph Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization, which I'm very impressed with and have been working with them for years and years. They, by the way, they do not fund this program, never have and never will, but I'm very impressed with the kind of work they do, and their website is www.consumer-action.org. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Great program, and very timely. A lot of these scammers are getting more and more advanced.
Well, at this time of the year, I think we're probably more scams than
anything.
Yeah.
Joe, two quick questions. One, I was not aware on the fraud alert, if you notified one of the credit reporting bureaus that they had to tell the other two.
That's correct.
But if it's a freeze, then you've got to notify each one individually.
That's correct.
That's right.
So talk about that, and then also that there is a scam where once your name is on a list of being scammed, they will call you and say, oh, we'll offer to protect you, and that's actually a scam too.
All right. Good, right. Steve.
Yeah. It's a re-scam. Thank you.
Okay, very good, Steve. Thank you for your suggestions. Right. That's great. All right, I'm going to encourage others to call 866, toll-free number, 866-798-8255. What about, talk a little bit more about the freeze, if you would, and how we are required, if we want to get a freeze, that we have to personally contact each of the three major credit reporting agencies and submit a police report.
Well, you don't necessarily have to submit the police report in order to get a credit freeze, but you do have to if you want to get it for free.
Well, yeah, that's true.
The difference is, with a fraud alert, it'll be typically for 90 days. You can get more extended fraud alerts if you request them, but they're not foolproof. What it means is that credit issuers are supposed to contact you before they issue a new line of credit, like a car loan or a credit card or what have you. They don't always do that, and sometimes even when you put a fraud alert out there, it fails to protect you, and an identity thief can exploit that information and get credit under your name and ruin your credit and leave you with a bunch of misery and have you. The credit freeze is almost foolproof because it locks down your credit. It can be a great inconvenience if you someday need to get credit soon, like, for example, a new credit card, a new car loan. If you've got all the credit you need, say if you're getting up in your years, you've got your mortgage paid off, you're not going to refinance your mortgage, or you don't need to get finance a car. In this situation, you have all the credit cards you need. Why not freeze your credit? It's a very cheap insurance policy that will really prevent almost all kinds of new account identity theft. But the difference is, it costs you $10 per credit bureau to put it on. It costs you more money to take it off unless you can prove that you're already a victim of identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
You can prove that, as you say, Chuck, with a police report. Then in California and in other states as well, you get that freeze for free. To take it off, it's still going to cost you some money. But that's the foolproof way to lock down your credit. It can be inconvenient for people who are establishing new lines of credit or might need new credit or a refinance. But for other people, it can be very effective. And for someone who is already a victim of identity theft, it's almost imperative because, once someone has that information, there's no guarantee that a fraud alert will be enough to stop it.
And one of the things that I think all of us need to realize is that if you have been a victim and you're submitting to all three national credit reporting agencies the request for a freeze, you also, if you are married, you also, your spouse, that person's credit will also be frozen. Isn't that correct, Joe?
It wouldn't affect lines of credit that person has under his or her name, and it would not affect lines of credit that you already have established. For example, if you have a joint credit card, a credit freeze wouldn't affect the use of, a credit card under your name or a joint credit card with anyone else. It's more to prevent new lines of credit from being established.
Okay.
So in that sense, it would be unlikely to affect your spouse. It would really just be a much greater inconvenience for you if you had need for credit. So you'd have to think about it carefully. But if you're fearing identity theft in a very real way, then it's almost a no-brainer. To circle back to Steve's second question about once he's referring to sucker lists. Once someone falls for one kind of scam, it's very likely that the scammers, you know, being social people like the rest of us, they're going to share that information with other people in the same business, people who are going to scam others in the future. So it's much more likely that someone's going to come back to you with a different kind of scam. And, you know, to even respond to people who call you with outlandish offers or this or that sweepstakes, or you've won a foreign lottery, even if you don't fall for it this time, it could trigger a lot more similar phone calls about other supposed opportunities.
All right, we're going to talk with Andre. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you, Chuck. I have a question. I think I heard your guest say that veterans' benefits are payable also to family members.
Let
did
me
I
ask,
hear that?
Did you stay with us, Andre? Did you say that, Joe?
This was for the new GI Bill program. It doesn't have to be used by a veteran, him or herself. It can also be used by a member of the immediate family. That's what
I see.
Not any benefit.
I don't know the time frame of that, but my father served in the Korean War. I don't know if he ever used any kind of benefit.
Well, I believe this would post-date his service. The GI Bill was first enacted in 1944, and this is an updated version of the program. But uh-huh. I don't believe they are retroactive to him. You could double check on that, but I'm almost positive it's just for people who have served more recently. But you know, if this was under this new GI Bill program, that would have been, but it would have had to been in the much more recent past.
Would you do this as long as Andre has brought this up again, Joe? Would you clarify for us what this new GI Bill program really means, very, very briefly? Can you do that?
Well, it's an educational benefit that is intended to reward veterans who have served our country, and it pays your tuition, and it's not just benefits that you yourself can take advantage of. If you have no need for them, they can also be used by a member of the immediate family.
I see.
It's a very generous benefit. More than 1 million people have used it so far.
Mm-hmm.
But this version is relatively new compared to the original GI Bill that was passed near the end of the Second World War.
Anything else, Andre?
When is the new GI Bill? When was that passed?
I don't know the exact year, but it's, you know, around the turn of this last decade.
Oh, within the last decade.
It was like within the last 10 years or so, yeah.
Last 10 years. Okay, Andre.
How could I look up anything from a previous time? Is there a database or contact the government or?
There's a general Veterans Benefit Administration website at benefits.va.gov.
Yes.
You go to benefits.va.gov and then /GI Bill, and that'll break down what all the qualifications are, and probably will give you a lot of information about how the program has been updated over the years. But, yeah,
www.benefits.va.gov. I'm not just trying to, you know, find some selfish benefit for myself, but I know my father would love to feel like he contributed somehow to my going forward. So thank you for your time.
Good. Okay, Andre.
Absolutely.
I hope this helps. One of the things, Joe, that I have found, and by the way, I know you wanted to talk about this, and maybe we better do that before we go on to anything else. There is something that we discussed briefly before we went on the air about open enrollment with respect to Medicare. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. You know, just in the same way we talked about these chip card scams, there's also scams that involve the period of open enrollment that we're in right now and that ends on December 7th. You know, it's when Medicare recipients comparison shop, change their plans. But for somebody who's not sure about how it all works, you know, scammers are trying to take advantage of older consumers with swindles. Like, for example, someone calling and saying that you must join our prescription plan or you might lose your Medicare coverage. You know, a complete falsehood. You know, the Medicare prescription drug plan, you know, Medicare Part D, it's voluntary. It doesn't affect your Medicare coverage at all. It's just a swindle. Or in other instances, someone has called or emailed saying that they need someone's Medicare number in order to update your account and get you a new card or send you your benefit information. But it's a scam, and it's intending to extract your personal or financial information to commit identity theft. So it's, again, the template is basically the same, but because open enrollment is what we're in right now from the middle of October to the end of the first week in December, that's the new spin on this old template that scammers are using.
That's good to know. Good to know. Have you had any experience or any information with respect to, because the job market has been so difficult? I mean, obviously, there are a lot of veterans. The president today actually talked about how veterans who have served their country so well and have learned how to deal with important and difficult issues, businesses should employ them throughout the country. And he made that statement today, not in those exact words, but have you found that people are putting their resumes on the internet and are finding that they're getting scammed, or have you gotten into that at all, Joe?
You know, at Consumer Action, we do hear complaints from people who have been scammed with this kind of job fraud. Sometimes people will post their resume online and receive information about a purported job offer, and they'll ask people to basically pay to get the job. You know, you have to submit an application fee or pay for some materials or to process your application. This is not really going to be the function of someone hiring, you know, in a position to hire you for a job. It's really just someone who's sending out bulk emails to lots of personal data they've harvested from some of these job posting websites, and they're seeing who can basically fall for sending a small amount of money in the off chance that it might help them get a job, but it's not true. And we have heard from people, unfortunately, who have fallen for this kind of a scam.
I had one of these a few years ago, a woman who was unemployed who submitted her resume on the internet, and she received a call from a recruiter, allegedly in Delaware. And I'm going to talk about the consumer as Ms. W., and she got a call from someone who claimed that this person was a recruiter with an outfit in Delaware and asked Ms. W. if she'd like to be a mystery shopper at $75 an hour.
Yeah.
Now, being unemployed, Ms. W. thought, wow, this sounds awful good. And so she was told that if she wanted to do this, she would visit Walmart, the Walmart stores, to evaluate Walmart's MoneyGram service, and she would get some money, and she would have to take it to MoneyGram and send the money to a designated person, and of course the address was in Canada. And this sounded very good to Ms. W., and since she was unemployed at the time, she said, yeah, I'd like to do this. So a few days later, she received a FedEx envelope in which were two $900 international money orders. And she called back to the recruiter saying, well, why did you send money orders in spite of cash? And the woman said, well, because we don't like sending cash through the, whether it's FedEx or the regular mail or whatever. And that sounded like it made some sense. She was directed to deposit the two money orders to her own personal checking account at a major bank in San Mateo County and get the cash. She did so. And she did what she was told. She went to one of the Walmart stores, to the MoneyGram department, and wired off this money. And a few days later, she found out the money orders were counterfeit, and the bank told her that she was responsible for paying back the bank. And she came to us, and unfortunately, we weren't able to do anything to help her. And this is the thing, when you've got something like this, you want to make sure that you give the bank adequate time. There's a federal law that says they have to release money. If you're going to, let's say, get a check, they have to release money within 3 days. You want to give the bank adequate time to make sure that that is legitimate. And this was a counterfeit. Both of these were counterfeit international money orders. Do you have any comments about that, Joe?
Yeah, you know, I have to say, unfortunately, we have also heard from people who fell for this mystery shopper scam, and actually for even larger amounts of money in some cases. And, you know, like you say, it works because there's a lag between when a bank is required to release funds that you deposit by check and the amount of time it takes a bank often to determine whether or not that check was legitimate.
Which may be as much as at least two weeks. Yeah,
it can take quite a lot longer than the 5 days, I believe, that Regulation CC says they have to release your funds in. And during that time, if you send money out of your account, the money's not coming back. If it turns out that you received bogus checks that the bank had released but had not verified as actually legitimate. And, yeah, we had heard the same exact story, someone who was enlisted to be a evaluator of how well MoneyGram works, and they were sent large checks and told to send back about $2,000 and keep the difference for themselves for their work. And once they sent back the check, you know, after having been told by the bank that, yep, after 5 days, sure, now it's good to go. You can do whatever you want with the money. They sent that money back to the scammers and found out a week or so later that the check had never been good.
Yeah, and that's something
responsible for the difference.
One of the things that I have observed as being a deputy DA in my consumer protection unit at the San Mateo DA's office is that from time to time we'll get trusting older persons who get involved with the lottery. And I need to let people know about this in light of what you're talking about, the number of days to make sure that a check or whatever it is, whether it's a money order or whatever, is legitimate. There was this gentleman, a Mr. T, who liked playing the lottery. He was, I think, somewhere in his early 70s, and he got a call from somebody saying it was a winner of $250,000 in that lottery. And that he would be sent an initial check for $4,800. He's to deposit it and then withdraw cash and wire to someone in Ecuador who would give the money to destitute persons who lost their homes due to a hurricane. And what this gentleman did when he got the check from supposedly the lottery for $4,800, he went to, and this is a major bank in San Mateo County, he went and talked to an assistant manager and said, I've just received this check. I've been told I won $250,000 in this lottery. I'm going to deposit the check, but I don't want to withdraw the money until the bank is sure that this is a legitimate check. And he even wrote this up for the manager, and the manager said, sure, we won't release the money. You won't be able to get the money until we're sure that the check has cleared and that it's a legitimate check. A few days later, this gentleman, a Mr. T, went back, talked with someone, was told, oh, sure, the check is good. He withdrew the $4,800, wired it to Ecuador. 1 week later, the bank got back to him and said that the check was counterfeit. Mr. T had in his account his own personal money, $1,100. The bank took that out of it and said, we're going to go after you for the balance of the $4,800. Yes, that's what happened. And the bank filed a small claims action against him in San Mateo County. He went and defended himself. In small claims court, you can't have an attorney, so he defended himself. He lost. He then filed a complaint with my office, the Consumer Protection Unit, and said, can you help me on this? And I suggested to him, in a situation like this, if the defendant loses, you can, if you try, you can ask the court to let you file a complaint against the bank. And you can go to the presiding judge. He apparently, from what this gentleman told me, Mr. T told me, he did go to the presiding judge, requested that he be given permission to do this, which would have given him a chance to have another trial. The judge refused to let him do this. So in other words, here he lost his money. Now, if, for example, he had come to my office before he had gone to small claims court and lost the small claims action, I might have been able to help him, because in essence, when he gave that assistant manager that letter saying, please don't release the money to me until you are sure that the check has cleared, I could have communicated to the bank what's going on here and probably have been able to help him as a breach of contract on the part of the bank, but he didn't do that. We have about, I think we have about a minute left in our program, which is now, of course, this is the our program. What are your final thoughts? We have two, actually, we have 2 minutes left. What final thoughts do you have?
Well, we have a great economic survival guide, as you mentioned, for service members and for veterans on our website, consumer-action.org. It's got a lot of great information. We fought very hard to try to protect veterans from predatory for-profit colleges that try to strip them of their new GI Bill benefits on substandard education. You know, for example, the average cost for a veteran to attend a for-profit college, $7,972 compared to $3,900 for a public college. It's over twice the price, and you're getting the highest student loan default rates, and the lowest graduation rates in these for-profit colleges. So we've got a lot of information in this guide about how you can look for schools that the Department of Education can help you navigate with them. The GI Bill program is a wonderful benefit for those looking to further their education. Make sure you don't fall for one of these for-profit colleges that are going to really just try to strip you of that benefit and leave you very little in education.
We're out of time, Joe.
Federal reforms we need to do.
We're out of time. I want to thank you very much, Joe, for joining us on the program, and I look forward to having you come back, and we'll talk about more scams in the near future. Joseph Rideout is Manager of Consumer Services for Consumer Action, the National Consumer Advocacy and Educational Organization. The website is consumer-action.org, www.consumer-action.org. Joe, thanks so much.
Thank you, Chuck.
Great to have you on the program. Next week, everybody, we're going to do our regular year-end income tax tips program. We're going to have a discussion of federal tax planning, which may reduce taxes on your 2015 income tax return. David Hellman is my guest, a specialist in taxation law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization. And if you're listening to the program live on November 18th, this will be our regular Call a Lawyer night, and you'll be able to call and speak to an attorney off the air as well as on the air on my program. But we have several attorneys here. Speak to any one of several attorneys off the air by calling 1-800-525-9917. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer is actually Debbie Kennedy. Nice to have you with us. Production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association. Additional funding for the program is provided by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights, and I hope you join us next time. I'm Chuck Finney.